Chapter 32.
D.I. Fintan O'Rourke dragged in a deep breath, puffed out his cheeks, and then knocked on the door. He heard the sound of a throat being given a phlegmy and bombastic clearance, followed by Commissioner Gareth Ferguson's familiar boom.
"Come in!"
Ferguson sat behind his large oak desk, rolling a cigar back and forth in his fingers. He was wearing breeches, a tunic, and a shirt with puffed sleeves. The ensemble was completed with leather boots, which were currently resting up on his desk. The commissioner had always had a distinctive sense of dress, but this was still somewhat of a departure.
"Ah, Fintan, excellent. You're tall. Be a good man and pick up that driver there."
The commissioner pointed at a golf club propped up against his bookcase. O'Rourke's look of confusion was met with an exasperated nod.
"Get on with it."
Once he had grasped the club, the commissioner pointed up at the roof.
"Now, as your commanding officer, I am ordering you to take out that bloody smoke alarm."
O'Rourke looked at the alarm, shrugged, and then did as instructed. On the third swing, it shattered, falling to the ground in three pieces, accompanied by a couple of golf ball-sized chunks of plaster and a considerable smattering of dust.
"Good shot. Pull up a chair."
Ferguson pulled a decanter of whiskey from his desk drawer, along with two glasses, and poured them both a generous measure.
"We were at a fancy dress ball, of all godforsaken things."
"I see, sir."
"Don't go for obsequious, Fintan. You can't pull it off. I, against my own protests, was Henry the Bastard Eighth."
"Who was Mrs. Ferguson?"
"Cleopatra."
"But..."
"Yes, I very much made that point too. My besainted decided she didn't like her original outfit, so she changed, leaving me in my ludicrous tights and whatever the hell else you call this stuff, playing at being a king, when not even being allowed to dress myself."
Ferguson threw back half his whiskey and grimaced. He ran a hand around his face.
"And the bloody glue for the beard irritates the skin like a bugger. I sent my new assistant home for a change of clothes, and you'll never guess what the snivelling shit did."
O'Rourke shrugged.
"Went home to his own house, and came back in his dress uniform. I shit you not. Thought I was sending him home to smarten up. I don't care if the monosyllabic mummy's boy is the Minister for Agriculture's favourite nephew. I fired the little shit there and then."
"Yes, sir."
"He cried. I mean, there is no crying in policing. That goes without saying."
Ferguson swished his drink around in his glass and looked into it as if seeking a divination of the future.
"So that concludes the small talk part of the evening. What in the blue blazes happened?"
"Well, sir, as you know, they hit a plane coming in from Antwerp. A twice-yearly flight where uncut diamonds are brought in. They knew everything. Timings, procedures, the lot. They strapped a bomb vest on the Madigan's head of security and cuffed him to the undercarriage of the airplane. Bloody nightmare. They were in and out in 2 minutes.
"May I ask,"
said Ferguson, producing a crystal ashtray from another drawer in his desk,
"where the hell was the heavily armed, highly trained emergency response unit that I have repeatedly gone to the minister to ask for more money for?"
"The ones who were already present at the airport had to deal with the bomb situation until the actual bomb squad could be mobilized."
"And?"
"And the rest got taken out with spikes spread on the roads in and out of the airport. That was done by the two members of the team who fled on motorbikes. They brought the whole thing to a standstill. It's a minor miracle nobody was killed in the chaos.
Yes, said Ferguson, bitterly ripping off the top of his cigar with his teeth and spitting the nub into the bin. What fucking luck! If these bastards, and let us dispense with the pretense that it might not be Carter and friends, got clean away. One of the many things I don't understand about this shitstorm is how three of your officers then ended up in a gunfight with them.
O'Rourke swallowed. The "your" was not lost on him. He leaned forward in his seat, running his hand around the back of his neck.
They played a hunch, sir. They'd seen one of Carter's boys casing the location a few months ago, back when we were trying to covertly follow them. They happened to be nearby.
And why the hell didn't they call for backup?
No time, sir. They'd seen them go in. They knew they had the matter of a minute to make a call. For the record, I support their decision.
Yes, said Ferguson. Well, I imagine we'll both have to spend quite a lot of time explaining that to an inquiry at some point. Charging in against former Army Rangers. Christ!
Yes, sir. O'Shea caught one in the chest. One of the robbers took one in the leg. Then they made good their escape.
Ferguson looked up at the ceiling.
So, can we nail these bastards? Can your officers identify them?
Well, yes and no. The raiders were wearing masks the whole time, so neither D.S. Cunningham nor D.S. Spain could make a positive ID. But, as I said, one of the raiders was shot in the leg. We just picked up Carter, Doyle and Moran from their houses. They returned a couple of hours ago, and no doubt they'll have a rock-solid, multiple-witness alibi for where they've been. That leaves O'Donnell, who's still out there somewhere, hopefully badly wounded and with nowhere to run. That's how we'll get them, sir.
Yes, said Ferguson, assuming Carter didn't put two in the back of his own man's head already.
O'Rourke said nothing. The possibility of that having happened had already occurred to him. A silence descended on the room for a moment. Ferguson threw his legs off the desk and dragged his considerable bulk to his feet. He belched and then raised his glass.
Devan, Wallace, McCall, McGrath, Hodgson, Murphy, Laidlaw, Murphy again, Smith, Gallagher, O'Shea.
O'Rourke looked up at Ferguson in confusion. The commissioner lowered his glass.
When you get this job, as you probably will one day, Finton, those are the names that will haunt your every waking moment. They'll be there, to slip in and rain on the best of days. It's what this job does to you. Some of them will have died as part of a road accident while on duty. Others dealing with some raving loon off his meds with a carving knife. Or sideswiped by some idiot drunk who thought he could make a break for it, rather than blow in a bloody bag. It doesn't matter. Everyone will be your fault, and I guarantee you, the names will be burnt into your very soul.
O'Rourke stood and raised his glass. Ferguson repeated the list.
Devan, Wallace, McCall, McGrath, Hodgson, Murphy, Laidlaw, Murphy again, Smith, Gallagher, O'Shea.
They both drank. Ferguson placed his glass down, picked up his cigar and drew a lighter from his pocket.
Tomorrow, you and I shall both go and see the widow, assuming she will allow it. Kids?
O'Rourke nodded.
Two, sir.
Third on the way. Ferguson went very quiet, staring at the goldfish bowl in the corner, which was minus a goldfish. Then he sparked his lighter and puffed the cigar into life.
Most of the time,
he said around the cigar,
there's no one who you can assuage those voices with. No one to blame. Or if there is, it's some pathetic fool, and that offers no satisfaction. That is not the case this time.
Ferguson drew a long drag on his cigar and blew the smoke out slowly.
This time, I have someone to blame and a pound of flesh to extract. I got off the phone with the minister 30 minutes ago. I offered the snivelling little shit a choice. Either we get carte blanche, or else he has my resignation, and the assurance that I will go out ugly. He rang his daddy, the whining little weasel, and after some spiel in which he pretended he had some say in it, he gave us the green light.
Ferguson moved around his desk.
We go in hard, Finton. Harder than Carter can possibly expect. Everyone they know, everyone they've ever met, we drag 'em in. That estate wants to provide alibis for their wayward sons. Fine. But it comes at a cost. If any of them has so much as a parking ticket, they get the full service.
Ferguson began jabbing his finger at the air, warming to his subject.
We squeeze and we squeeze until people are queuing up to rat these bastards out and save their own skins. The Irish public, ungrateful and gormless as they may often appear, will not stand for a member of An Garda Síochána being gunned down in the line of duty by some pathetic excuse of a man. We cry havoc, and let slip the dogs of war.
As if on cue, the battered smoke alarm on the floor issued a plaintive, beeping warble. Ferguson stepped forward, and in one decisive stomp, obliterated it.
In other words, he said, Tommy Carter is going down.